Hey, Hicken here. Thanks for checking out the 1010XL On Demand. It's brought to you by Kuhn Flowers. Locations on Beach Boulevard and in Ponte Vedra. Kuhn Flowers wants to be your florist.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Wednesday night, middle of the week. Just rolling through the month of June, the great police. Tough to believe that the three-man band only put together five albums, 6 years in existence. And many would consider them arguably the best three-man band of all time. And truly one of the great bands of the late 70s and 1980s. Artistic indifferences. LaVey and I have kind of gone through that. The 6 months that we've been together feel a little bit like 6 years. I don't know how much longer we'll be able to maintain. But I mean, that's amazing. Police were so good. Their sound was really different from anything else during that era. I mean, a little bit of punk to classic rock. But they just couldn't roll. Atlantis, what was it? Alanis Demore, I think, was their first album. You know, I know the last two were the most popular. That was Ghost in the Machine and Synchronicity, which is actually the first concert I ever saw in 1983 when The Fix and The Flock of Seagulls opened up for The Police on the Synchronicity tour out in Foxborough where the Patriots play. And what, Zenyatta Mondatta and Regatta de Blanc. I had them all. On cassette, only five albums. Just frightening. Best three-man band of all time? Rush, Cream.
Can I throw in the Jonas Brothers?
Jimi Hendrix. Shut off your microphone. You're banned for the remainder of the program. You are officially banned for the remainder of the program. We're talking about ZZ Top, Rush, the Jimi Hendrix Experience, The Police, and Cream, and you dropped on us the Jonas Brothers?
I mean, they have just risen to greatness again recently.
Shut
They're
off
back,
that
Rick.
Mic. Shut. I told you we had artistic indifferences. LaVey, are you kidding me?
I'm dead serious right now.
Yeah, all right. I'll let it go. I want to play to the younger audience. I do. I mean, I feel like this show is lit. You know, I'm doing whatever it takes to hit that younger demographic. And typically I'll roll in here and I'll say, well, hey, roll the opening tune tonight. Let's do this. And then I don't make a request for tunage the remainder of the evening. That's all on the young, spunky Matt LaVey, the producer of Into the Night with Rick Ballew. So here we roll. Hey, listen, I'm always good for it. You want to send in your opinion on the text line built by Lifetime Enclosures, by all means, do so. Give me the best three-man band of all time. Maybe you can send out a link, LaVey, that says the Jonas Brothers, only their old stuff, the Jonas Brothers Unplugged, or perhaps the Jonas Brothers performing in front of only 1,000 chicks. I don't know.
I'm thinking about putting out a Twitter poll right now just to see who the best three-man band is, and we will include the Jonas Brothers in that.
Hmm.
Throw it out there. See what the people think.
I don't think Cream will get it because that's way, way back. You know, in the 60s. I think around here, there's a lot of Southern rock, so probably ZZ Top would get it. You know, the Jimi Hendrix Experience is a little bit more on legend. Hey, and listen, Jimi Hendrix only produced four albums. All right? Rush has been around since 69. They actually probably should be it if you look at endurance and, you know, just the ability, the iron horse in the band. The fact that they have survived everything. And I know Geddy Lee's coming out with a brand new book on the bass, which I'm actually looking forward to reading. And, you know, reportedly their days of touring are over. Yeah, all these other bands come back and they make so much money. I saw Sting like 6 months ago with Shaggy. And he's out there, you know, playing hip-hop and rap and reggae. And it was kind of a fun show at Daly's place. And he played some old Police tunes. But, I mean, come on. It's time for the Police to get it back together. Call Andy Summers, the great drummer. Last time I saw him was on, what was the name of that show where they buy Storage Hunters? Last time I saw him, Andy Summers, the great guitar player. Stuart Copeland, I should say. the drummer. Three blonde-headed men. All right, let me get off that. Let's get to some Jaguars football. Every once in a while, I just got to roll with other things that are deeply involved in my life. And the Police was a definite experience for me. The first concert I ever did see. What a great show. Martha Quinn. You guys ready for the Police? And what's the name of that song? Voices Inside My Head. They started playing that. It's like a theme. It's like an anthem. And, you know, it was almost like a scene from Apocalypse Now. All of a sudden, you saw a helicopter kind of come from over the sunset. And they dropped it right behind the stage in Foxborough. And these three little 150-pound blonde-headed freaks pop out of the helicopter and just got after it. And it was pretty cool stuff. You know, we're talking 1983. When this actually happened. Let's push things forward to 2019 because there's a lot cooking tonight. Game three, the series shifts to Oracle, where Steve Kerr, in 4 years, is 143-21. How do you bet against him? Well, Kevin Durant's not playing. Is Klay Thompson? We'll find out. I just checked 5 minutes ago. The hamstring, apparently they want him to sit. Will he? We'll see. Toronto only 4-4 on the road this year in the playoffs. That doesn't add up to becoming an NBA championship team. You're going to have to win at least one of those on the road and then take your chances on being able to win two more home games. Here we are now, best 3 out of 5, series obviously tied at one game apiece. That is at 9 o'clock tonight once we get off the air, tip time in Oakland. But we'll talk a little bit about the NBA Finals as they continue to move forward. It's been a long time off, it seems like. Again, game three coming up a little less than 2 hours away from right now. You know, college hoops a little bit on that tonight, bringing back the three-point line, making it more of the international flavor. Makes a little sense. I think the three ball in college basketball is not nearly deep enough. Just really interested how this all came about. I hadn't really heard much talk about it at all, and it became kind of like a news dump today. Interesting story where, you know, we're hearing not a lot of changes are coming in college basketball. We're hearing not a lot of changes are coming in Major League Baseball until the new collective bargaining agreement. That includes putting more netting down the first and third base line after the very upsetting incident we saw with a young girl just the other day where she was hit by a foul ball. Just absolutely brutal for moms and dads out there. See your precious little daughter get hit by a line drive, a screaming line drive. So all of that to get into. The Jaguars, off today, back at it tomorrow, back at it Friday. OTA session number 9 tomorrow. Nagging injuries all of a sudden coming forward for this football team. Well, it's part of the game. Every team has to deal with it. Today they bring in Taj McGowan, a running back. We've talked about how on Tuesday, okay, the rookie, Raquel Armstead, it appeared to be the lower left leg. Don't know if it was the calf. Don't know if perhaps it was a little bit higher, and it was maybe the hamstring. But I was expected to interview Armstead after Tuesday's practice. He wasn't available. He left practice early, and he was under the guidance and the observation of team doctors and trainers. You know, that's an awful lot that we've seen with this rookie class. They're already without, as we know, Josh Allen. He has not been practicing. Okay, we have seen that. I had an opportunity to talk with Quincy Williams very early after his first ever OTA. He was stepped on. Again, all these run together. I want to say it was after maybe the fourth OTA where he was stepped on and he was carted off. But he was able to come back and, yeah, it had to have been a Tuesday. Because he came back on that Thursday, that going back about a week ago, when that actually did take place. Good to see him back out there. You know, it's tough to tell what's going on with the rookie offensive tackle, Taylor, because pads aren't there. And, of course, I've been absolutely gushing about the performance so far of Josh Oliver at tight end. To me, he has truly been one of the guys that has surprised early on in camp. But, you know, we have some Jaguars talk to get into tonight. I was kind of fishing around today a little bit, looking for a peep here, a peep there. Perhaps a conversation here, a conversation there. Nothing on Duke Johnson. Not even a sniff. Nope. Not even a sniff. Now, doesn't mean that something like that could not happen. Let the market bear, you know, let the market play itself out. For a guy like Duke Johnson, he's not going to fetch a top pick. And what are you going to really get for Duke Johnson now that he's buried in Cleveland? Nick Chubb is there. They bring in Kareem Hunt. Duke Johnson would be a tremendous addition to the Jacksonville Jaguars, or any other team for that matter, as a third down back. What's he going to fetch? Fifth round pick? I'm asking. I'm not telling. I'm asking. I don't know. His touches per game have gone down every year since 2015, since he is a rookie. Still, you add everything up, well over 200 receptions in 4 years. And a guy who's just begging right now for the change of scenery. See, I love players like that. I know you can make that case for Chris Connolly. You can make that case for Jeff Swaim. You can make that case for Jake Ryan. You can now make that case for Terrell Pryor. You can really make that case about anyone who was caught or left for nothing or injured in this league. There's not a lot of forgiveness in this league. You find someone younger, cheaper, you're gone. And that's just the way it is. Duke Johnson did some nice things in Cleveland, but Cleveland is an organization that invents ways to lose games. And for him to make the comments that he has made and ordering a trade, now Baker Mayfield is popping off and you get all this stuff, it's only a matter of time until he is moved. So if you want to add in on that tonight as well, the 1010XL text line is good, built by Lifetime Enclosures. We'll grab some of your input on the always spirited 1010XL text line. All right, tell you what I'm going to do tonight. I do have a lot on the Jags that I want to get into, but I want to start with a little bit of college football. Okay, I had an off day today with no Jags, and I spent a lot of time just really doing some homework, and I was going back in the time, and I was looking at the Gators, and I was looking at the Seminoles, and I really looked back a year ago, and then kind of in my own mind, put together a possible forecast for 2019. And right now, you look in downtown Hogtown, it is 85 degrees and a nice light breeze. Everyone's happy. You look in Tallahassee right now, and it's like you're living in Cleveland, okay? It's like 30 degrees. The men and women, they all look alike. Okay, I mean, that's, you know, salad is not an option. It's nothing but a bunch of meat eaters right now in God's country. Not easy on the eyes. Everyone's angry. Everyone's antsy. The numbers are down. I mean, more than 60-something thousand in year one under Willie during the spring game. This past year, like, what, 27,000 was announced? The people have spoken. They're pissed. Well, I have some numbers here, and I have a little bit of input here on what I believe they could be putting together this season. We'll come back and talk about that. Share it with you just a little bit. See if you agree and or disagree. So let's talk some college football as we get things rolling on a Wednesday night with Rick Ballew. Coming up next, we take a look at the Noles. We take a look at the Gators.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, getting a lot of play tonight for Run DMC. Best three-man band of all time. The original hip-hopsters out of Los Angeles. Where I used to have a lot of street cred out in Compton when I was on at night on AM 1540, the home of the Trojans. That, my friends, is a true story. All right, we got a lot to do tonight. The text line is just buzzing. Yeah, I'll get there momentarily. I'm looking forward to the interview in Taj McGowan. I want to ask him what it's like to win a natty. Right? He did it at UCF. Right? I mean, they hung a banner there, didn't they? And I'm moving now to the state of Florida, when it comes to college football. And even in the pretend world, where Central Florida is right next door to Disney and Universal and, well, a couple of other things that I won't say because this is a family-related program, they're a heck of a lot closer to any natty than the big three in this state as of late. It's really a crying shame if you look at what has happened at Miami, Florida, and Florida State. Now, Dan Mullen deserves all the credit in the world, and I have given it to him. Okay? He took an offense that averaged 22.1 points a game. And in a year, they're averaging 35 points. That is a tremendous offensive makeover. And he has brought excitement back to the Florida Gators. Skill position-wise right now, they're as rich there as they've been, really going back to the days of Urban Meyer. I know there's a couple of question marks on that offensive line. And you did lose some defensive leaders. But you've got great wide receivers. You've got a stable of backs. You've got a quarterback who was drafted today by the Boston Red Sox, who did come out in Felipe Franks and say that he is going to stay at the University of Florida. I think right now, if you look at the, you know, the confidence factor within the big three, Florida right now feels good about where they're at. And you should. The thing that sticks out for me more than any with Dan Mullen was his ability to close 2 years ago in recruiting and then the tremendous year he had this past season. I really question that a little bit. Okay, Spurrier didn't like to recruit. Ron Zook was phenomenal at it. Urban certainly got it done. All right, and then you can go through Muschamp, the ups and downs, and McElwain, whatever. But I just didn't know if Dan Mullen would be a great recruiter at Florida, even though I obviously did a nice job at Mississippi State. Just look at some of the players who have come out of that, you know, out of that university in the last couple of years. So that's the thing that impressed me most right now for Florida. And they're going to be a preseason top 10 team. Okay, they're clearly number two in the East. They're far behind Georgia. They're not a national championship contender. They are an SEC Eastern contender. And that's good enough to be in the top 10 in all of college football. Florida State, on the other hand, it has been absolutely miserable. Okay? You know, one other thing with Florida, because it seems like most of the talk about the Gators is how that offense went from 22.1 points a game to 35 points a game. They ended up being ranked the number one most improved offense in college football. I mean, you improved your offense by 13 points a game. Okay? The defense doesn't get enough credit. They improved overall defensively, points per game, fifth in the nation in 2018. You were also fifth in the nation overall in total defense. You were fifth in the nation in pass defense. So the defense still doesn't get nearly as much credit, only because even during the down years, and what I mean by down years under Jim McElwain are years in which you went to an SEC championship game, but you had your doors blown off, really, in consecutive weeks, by the Seminoles, by Alabama, and then in a bowl. Just go back and look at the scores. You were giving up 30-plus in each and every one of those games. And you were wrapping up your season by losing three straight games. I don't care what the situation is. I don't care if you make it to Atlanta. That is not positive for your program when you're losing three straight football games. But the Gators have always had a good defense, and the Gators are always sending defensive players to the NFL. So to make that type of improvement in those key defensive categories really says a lot about what Florida was able to do on that side of the football this past year as well. Florida State is pinning their hopes on Willie Taggart. Now, I looked it up today and I wrote it down. Year one at Western Kentucky in 2010, he was 2-10. Okay? He improved to a 7-5 record in 2011. Okay? I'll give you that. That's the arrow pointing up. USF in 2013, he was 2-10. Year two, 4-8 in 2014. No, not good enough for me. Oregon, 7-5, took his dream job, went to Florida State in 5-7. I'm just giving you the trend. I'm just giving you facts. Because if you bump into some guy in a bar right now, you're going to get a whole bunch of this. Willie's great in year two. Break up the Noles. Willie Taggart gets it done in year two. Oh, really? Outside of the tremendous success he had with the Hilltoppers, going from 2-10 to 7-5, has he really improved all that much? He took the Bulls from a 2-10 to a 4-8. And then the only other year we have to look at is really Oregon. We don't know what would have happened in year two with Oregon. Rob Chudzinski did a real nice job. And oh, by the way, they may be the team to beat in the Pac-12 this year. They returned their quarterback in Justin Herbert, and they returned their entire offensive line, which is huge in the world of college football. But I just want to temper some feelings here tonight in that all of a sudden, you know, Willie's got the magic dust, and all of a sudden it's year two, and things just completely turn around. No, 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 no. History tells us that is not the case. Also at Florida State, the abomination of their offense last year. I couldn't believe when I read this. I had to go actually check it on another source to make sure it wasn't a misprint. Because I'm thinking Cam Akers, even though I thought Jacques Patrick is one of the most overrated Seminoles really to play in the past decade, a five-star, I'm still pissed he ran over that imaginary line and tripped in Death Valley and Clemson 4 years ago. Damn it, keep your feet. Would have changed the entire complexion of that game. Oh, boo, he was only a freshman. I don't care if he's only a freshman. You can't be tripping on imaginary lines. It's what Antoine Smith used to do. All the time, Smith would do that during his career. Florida State averaged 2.7 yards a carry last year. I mean, 2.7 yards. This is Florida State. How do you average 2.7 yards a tote when you have two five-star backs in your arsenal? I know why. Because you had a terrible offensive scheme. You had slow, pudgy, soft as puppy poo offensive linemen. 2.7 yards a carry for Florida State offensively. But all of the pressure and all of the panic and all the expletives go on the offense. Do you realize that Florida State's pass defense last year was the number one worst decline in Power 5 schools in college football? And this was a year after Tavarius McFadden, who I think allowed touchdowns to Stevie Wonder, Mr. Magoo, and Ray Charles. They had the number one decline in pass defense in all of college football. They had the number two worst decline in points per game defensively. And we're not talking about a juggernaut here. Last time I checked in 2017, Florida State had to line up a game in the final week of the year. I don't remember who they played. It was like Mississippi Valley State Junior College. Cancel because of a hurricane. Let's replay the game. Jimbo's not going to coach it because he's already prostituted himself out. It was a yearly event for Jimbo. He's half gone to A&M. Let's give Odell Hagans the team. See if you can beat him. And they did. Okay, beat Florida, beat them. They were 7-6. They went from 7-6 to 5-7. And during that course, they had the worst decline in pass defense in college football. In the second worst decline in points per game defensively. In the worst rushing offense per play in college football. do you want me to stop or do you want me to continue? Because I have more material here. I have more nuggets. I spent time on it today. Trash. Garbage. An advanced disposal dream is Florida State right now. A freaking advanced disposal dream. And how are they going to turn this around? By giving it that good old college try? They're laughing and giggling after the spring game. They brought back the alumni with beer bellies to their toes, and they're bald now, and everyone's having a good... They weren't having a good time. You had maybe 20,000 people there. They're pissed off. That's what's wrong with today. And it's not the kids' fault. It's the parents' fault. I always say it. Losing is part of our culture. God bless Nick Saban, who right now is spewing venom because his team lost a natty. He is freaking miserable. Willie Taggart's all smiling. I mean, everything's just great in Tallahassee. It's not great. Season tickets are down. Attendance is down. The vibe is down. Why are guys having fun and smiling? Just a game below. Oh, BS, it's just a game. It's a huge freaking business. And here's what I got for you. Florida State cannot afford to fire Willie Taggart. Okay? They are married to Willie Taggart. I'd like to get a show of hands of people who are driving around right now on a Wednesday night who are in an unhappy marriage. Florida State's in an unhappy marriage. It was a shotgun freaking wedding. They hired a guy under 500 in his career who was an absolute abomination. I asked him last year in Charlotte at the ACC meetings if he was going to call the plays, and his quote to me was, "You think I'm going to sub out the play calling?" Like he's a contractor, like he's building a house. He didn't know how to run an offense. Third and one, second and one, little razzle-dazzle plays behind the line of scrimmage, east-west crap. I can't wait to talk to him next month. "Hey, coach, looks like you subbed out that offense, didn't you? Here comes Kendall Briles. Are you going to give him full autonomy of that offense? Does he have the keys? Or are you going to be peeking in through your headset, telling him what to run and watching him the whole way through?" Enjoy your summer, Florida State fans, because it gets a lot worse come this fall.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, three-man band tonight, the Beastie Boys. Boy, did they ever suck. I know kids like to get wasted and hear them, but they were just terrible. And I do need to apologize. Run DMC is a New York band, not an L.A. band. The last thing I want to do is get involved in bullets being fired back and forth between the East and West Coast gangs.
Heck, it almost happened to you last night between the 3-6 Mafia, but you got out of that one.
James Coleman Mafia, my Knoll friend. I still love my Knoll people. I'm just beyond pissed at the program.
Go Noles!
And I'm looking at some of my social media, people telling me this, people telling me, it's just amazing how people accept losing. I mean, all the power to you, man. I mean, have a great life. Seriously. I mean, it's the acceptance of losing. That's one reason why I'm so glad to be in a pro town and not a college town anymore. Even though when I was in the college town, you know, the Noles were top four every year. I had full access to Bobby Bowden's program, and it was an absolute treat. But the Jags have had more losing seasons than winning seasons, and the last decade has been pretty hard. But the fans support, but also are not afraid to voice their opinion. When it comes to disgust, when it comes for the need of change. And that is evident. And that's the way it should be in a pro town. It's disappointing in a college town. Listen, I'm friends with members of the media over there. I understand you can't take shots local. You can't do it in Gainesville. You can't do it in Athens. You can't do that stuff. You won't get access. You won't get anything if you rip the local team. All right? I mean, I know. Dave Hart, the former athletic director, wouldn't allow me to be part of the Florida State Seminole pre- and post-game broadcast because he was concerned that I would have been too hard on the team. I get it. I lived it. I understand it. Okay? I mean, that's life. That's the way it is. It is amazing, though, if you look around here and what's going on with the major three programs. And you mentioned a name like Lane Kiffin. When I mention Lane Kiffin, what honestly comes to mind? I mean, what, is he the modern-day football version of Larry Brown? Where he takes a job here, takes a job there, takes a job here, takes a job there. You know, Lane Kiffin has a longer tenure at any one of the big three in this state? Combined? Think about that. Manny Diaz, games coached, zip. Dan Mullen, games coached, 13. Willie Taggart, games coached, 12. Lane Kiffin has more tenure in this state than Miami, Florida, and Florida State combined. And you're married to these coaches for each and every one of those programs. Manny Diaz, I wish the best for. I really do. But it's never going to happen down there. People don't want to go to Miami anymore. People are on television everywhere. It's too expensive to go to Miami. They don't have the facilities to go to Miami. Miami is, as I've said before, today's version of a dad's bod. Yo! They're never going to be close to winning a national championship again. Frankly, they haven't done anything since they've been in the Atlantic Coast Conference. They haven't made it to an ACC championship game yet. Not going to happen for the U. Okay? Florida's got a chance. It's going to take years and years of building. They're in a brutal conference. They're an easy division, but a brutal conference. Telling you, the best way for Florida to get there is the expansion to an 8-team college football playoff. You get a big upset early on. They're not going to make any Final Fours. It's not going to happen. It's just not. Florida State, long way away. I mean, do you realize that I didn't even get to this. There was so much more I wanted to get to, but I obviously did not. You realize Florida State is a 20.5-point underdog against Clemson? I mean, if that doesn't disgust every single Seminole fan out there listening, I don't know what ever will. And I know you get pissed at me. I'm merely telling you the truth. Okay? I was at the punt Ruski and the Deion Sanders return in the rain in 88. I was at the Charlie Ward benching when Danny Cannell came in and threw interceptions. And then Oles came back in the fourth quarter. All right? The touchdown pass to Kevin Knox late in the corner of the end zone. There in 92. I was there for the original Bowden Bowl. I've been the Don't even talk to me about loyalty and by the way, those games in 88 and 92, wasn't even in the media then. I was a student. Actually, I graduated in 91, but I kind of hung around Tallahassee. I had a great job as a bartender. That's when I fell into the media. And you're telling me now that they're a 3-touchdown underdog? There's no other way to say it. Violent is what I am. Violent. And every time I think of what I saw during the spring game, where it was you-know-what and giggles, I can't help but think what a real coach would do and what a real camp would be like. Way too passive, way too soft. And that is what's going on right now. Paul Feinbaum, you know, he sold out. God bless him. I would have too. I mean, who wouldn't have? He's getting paid the amount of money. But some of the stuff he comes up with now is so asinine. He had a graphic that I think popped up yesterday that I saw. Teams under the most pressure to win a national title. Okay, let's word that out again. Teams under the most pressure to win a national title. Who do you think he had at number one? Well, it's Paul Feinbaum. Of course he had Alabama at one. But he couldn't be any more wrong. Alabama goes to a national title every year. They're either going to win it or they're going to lose it. They do not have the most pressure on them to win a national title. The team with the most pressure on them to win a national title is who Paul Feinbaum chose as team number two. That's Georgia. They haven't won a national championship in almost 40 years. How can it even be close? How can you even put Alabama in the same sentence as Georgia? Mark Richt did a phenomenal job at Georgia. Kirby Smart is doing an incredible job at Georgia. Georgia has to win a national championship. Alabama could go 7-5 this year, and it would be looked upon as an awful year. And oh, by the way, if they went 7-5 and you saw a spring game tape, I guarantee you wouldn't see Nick Saban having a whole lot of fun with his players and the alumni there, bald and shirtless and pot bellies. No, you wouldn't see that at Alabama. Are you kidding me? Not like the way they do it over at Florida State. The pressure's on Georgia. They haven't won a national title since Buck Ballew, since Herschel Walker. I mean, that's why I hate sellouts, in a way. I respect them because they're getting paid. But the Skip Bayless and the Paul Feinbaum, when you create questions like this and you don't give the obvious answer, you instead give an answer to try to create a little bit of anxiety and a little bit of feedback from the Joe Sixpack fan. I got to imagine the thousands of people who responded to him all said what I'm saying to you right now. And I don't even know if it's online. I saw it on TV. Pressure's on Georgia, folks. Georgia had one of the greatest offensive line recruiting classes in the history of college football a couple of years ago. And they're plugging in five-star quarterbacks each and every year. Look at the stable of backs that they have had. The defensive players that they're sending to the NFL. He lists Michigan. Well, didn't Michigan win a national championship in 1997? Mention Oklahoma. Didn't Oklahoma win a couple of natties, including one in the Orange Bowl? At least one. I don't know if they won one since. They've been in big games. Notre Dame's got a little bit of heat on them. They haven't won one since 1988. Okay, in my opinion, I would vote it Georgia, Notre Dame. That's where my list begins. But putting Oklahoma in Clemson, it says, how does Clemson have any pressure on them at all to win a national title after what they have done the last 4 years? Anyway, pretty stupid, but I took the bait. You want to respond to that, I always give credit to people I borrow material from or use ideas from. In this case, it was Paul Feinbaum. I just sometimes get so disappointed with what is a very easy question, yet the answer is clearly wrong. And in this case, it's not Alabama. It is Georgia. All right, coming up in hour number two, we're going to talk a little bit about the NBA Finals. Game three coming up tonight. Should be an interesting one where, let's face it, you know, Golden State doesn't lose in Oakland. They are absolutely dominant, and that has been the case, again, so far Actually, this year, a little bit of stubbing of the toe. I think they lost 11 home games this year at Oracle. And, you know, if you consider that, Steve Kerr's only lost 21 in 4 years. It is an unusual number this year. So, you know, they have proven that they are human. As a matter of fact, they don't even have home court here in this best of seven. That instead is in Toronto. And I love our neighbors to the north. Okay, that's where hockey originated. I have a lot of respect for Toronto and, you know, Montreal. I'm not a fan of the Canadiens because of, what's the best way I could say this without getting in any trouble? They're wussies in the world of hockey. St. Louis is kind of playing their style. The difference between St. Louis and Montreal is St. Louis is a tough, physical, hard-nosed hockey team, but they flop incredibly. That's what Montreal has always done. They have always been the team that will flop, that, you know, should leave the business and go straight to Hollywood because of their acting skills. And I can't wait to see if we ever do find an embellishment call made in the significance of a Stanley Cup final. There really should have been one the other night, in my particular opinion. But anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit. I do want to get back to Duke Johnson here. All right, minicamp again tomorrow. And, you know, this is purely speculation. There's no conversations at all that I am aware of that has Duke Johnson coming to Jacksonville to be a third down back. But what do you think about that? Give me some of your thoughts again on the 1010XL text line built by Lifetime Enclosures. You can do that at 641-1010. So we'll come back in our second hour. Also, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, Pro Football Focus and the way that they grade certain math. I just don't like new math in athletics. I don't like sabermetrics. I don't like the whole war wins above replacement in baseball. I'm more of a traditional old school guy when it comes to numbers. Football as well. Some of these analytics get a little bit sideways for me. But I've been gushing about Nick Foles, perhaps even overdoing it early on in camp. Pro Football Focus put together a little something that says his accuracy may not be anywhere near as good as we believe. And they came forward with some numbers. I'm going to actually share those with you coming up in our second hour as well. So we are jam-packed tonight. We will roll until 9 o'clock. Tonight's show is brought to you by Advanced Disposal. They are hiring right now in Jacksonville, and that includes in Clay County. Tremendous opportunity for you right now. What a great business Advanced Disposal is. A $1,500 signing bonus at Advanced Disposal. You do need a CDL, a commercial driver's license. You have one of those, and bam, $1,500 signing bonus. Outstanding pay, incredible benefits. Apply at advanceddisposal.com/careers. Go ahead and do that today. Second hour coming up with Rick Ballew. We go till 9 o'clock on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Oh, yeah, fall in. Ginger Baker, Eric Clapton, Jack Bruce, the original Cream. Eric Clapton in the Hall of Fame 3 different times, for those of you who did not know. How's your ballot going, LeVay, on the best three-man bands of all time? You've introduced to us the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, we threw out there, what, Jonas Brothers, Rush. We got some other ones on here, too. Run DMC, who we talked about earlier.
I've already created a major ruckus tonight by referring to my day spent in L.A. And Run DMC is, of course, a New York band. I'm full aware of Tupac and Biggie Smalls and I don't want to cause a riff there.
Yeah, we definitely don't need you beefing with any more mafias, all right?
Oh, no.
You got to stay away.
I am a lover, not a fighter. Nirvana calls tonight?
Yeah, we got a couple texts about Nirvana. A lot of people on the Nirvana train, apparently.
Yeah, yeah. Give you Nirvana. I will. I'll give you that. I still think right here, Cream. Jimi Hendrix, without any question. But, you know, I got to go with the... I think I would end up going probably Rush 1, The Police 2. And you know what? You got to support those threesome from Texas, man. ZZ Top. Just look at ZZ Top and Rush and how long they've been able to do it. It's amazing. Three-man bands are really rare. But they were great artists, no doubt about it. Yeah, I love the history of music and going back into things. It, you know, my all-time, what I love as well is that you have three-man bands, but you also had, during that same era, like the late 60s and the 70s, one of my favorite bands of all time, The Doors, which I do know is a Los Angeles-based band. That was a four-man band, but they didn't have a bassist. How rare is that? Ray Manzarek basically set the bass with his organ, with his percussion. And Robbie Krieger, who was just here, I saw him like a year and a half ago. He was at the Ponte Vedra Concert Hall, the original guitar player with Jim Morrison and the Doors. And he was freaking unbelievable. He had a son playing the role of Jim Morrison. And he surrounded himself with tremendous musicians. And it was a great time. So, you want to talk music? We'll talk. Hey, listen. Anything that will get me away from talking about Florida State football, I'm freaking happy. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, I'm in a good mood. Ah! I can't believe I wasted a couple segments on them tonight. They're not, I feel like they're not worthy of my time anymore. They put in a half-ass effort. Why should I put in a full effort on them? Let's get to Duke Johnson. You know, I'm really mixed here because obviously the Jaguars have something up their sleeve. I don't know what it is. They don't have a third down back. If they were playing this Sunday, I have no idea how things would work on third down. First and second down, it's Leonard Fournette. And when he was here, he looked the part. 226 pounds, in good shape. We've kind of exhausted whether or not he should be here or not. That conversation won't die, but for tonight, I'd rather talk about other things. Okay? I do like what I've seen in Thomas Rawls. As a matter of fact, he has been the back out there that has impressed me the most, and I'm saying that because he's been at all eight OTAs. I've only seen Leonard Fournette out there four times. And if you look at what's going on with Thomas Rawls, absolutely, he has shown the ability to run. He has shown the ability to catch. Yet you do talk with people, and they will tell you that he is not, quote-unquote, a third down back, even though I asked him about that during an interview a week ago, and he said, absolutely, whatever it takes. I trust some other people that I have talked to that he's not the third down back. Is it Al Blue? Okay. Tournament tested. 5 years in the leagues. Done some good things. I hate the expression, he's just a guy. Want a little bit more out of him than being just a guy. Came away being really impressed with the rookie Armstead over the last couple of weeks. Looks like a two down guy, but obviously they're aware of the fact that he's not a third down back. That he has trouble catching the ball. That's been evident. He's had some Stonehenge hands. He's also caught a couple of balls that I thought was good to see. And I like the fact that the Jaguars are working on him with that. I still think right now, the here and now, he's a two-down back. Downhill back. Looks to me like he's going to have a pad level low. He runs that way. You can't really tell now because they're not hitting. But I'm just telling you what I'm seeing. Benny Cunningham, I've seen nothing because he hasn't practiced. He's been on the side. Now, there's a lot of talk that he's the third down back. But anyway, let's put that all together. Where does it leave the Jags? There's no fullback. They have tight ends who can play that position if needed. It's a new offense, which I'm beginning to understand. Unfortunately, I can't really give any secrets until it's put on the record. But trust me, it's different than what you saw with, well, pick your offensive coordinator. Okay, there were several. Going back to Gus and Doug. Things are going to change. But I'm starting to wonder, you know, do they go out and just better themselves by getting a guy like Duke Johnson? And what is the asking price? What can you get him for? Could you get him for a fifth-round pick? Could you get him for a sixth-round pick? Where does the market go from here? Does it stay the same? Does his market value increase if there's an injury in the month of August? Yes. Yes, yes, yes. But does it flatline here after mandatory minicamp across the NFL the latter part of June into July? Yes. Timing is everything in life, right? So I wonder about that. And I look at Duke, and I'm not even looking at his rushing statistics. I'm looking at his balls caught per season. 61 as a rookie. And you go back to the year 2015, he caught 61 footballs. This football team lost T.J. Yeldon a year ago, caught 55. He didn't play in two games. He didn't get off the bench in another. And I know one other game he didn't get a touch. You're talking about, if you were to look at those 55 receptions for T.J. Yeldon in 2018, my guess is that for the most part, they came in about 11 games. Even though if you look at the numbers, it'll say he played in 14 games. I'm saying he caught them in 11. He caught 55 and 11. So you do the math. Just over five. Or that would be five. 61 balls as a rookie for Johnson. 53 the year after. A career high 74 in 2017. Then last year, you know, he didn't get as many touches. He ended up catching 47 footballs. That's more than the 40 carries that he actually did have. We know Nick Chubb is there. We know they went out and they brought in Kareem Hunt. He's all upset he wants to get moved. I don't know where they're going to end up. I mean, listen, there are a lot of reports about the teams that were interested in Gerald McCoy when he was cut in Tampa a few weeks ago. It really didn't work out that way outside of Cleveland. I mean, Baltimore kind of surprised, and even Carolina kind of surprised. You remember some of the teams that were mentioned? Hell, Jacksonville was on the list and some. But certainly Indianapolis was on the list. New England was on the list. As far as I know, he didn't visit Jacksonville, Indianapolis, or New England. He visited three teams. Baker Mayfield, who really should be a talk show host. I hope he doesn't lose his job this year because he could replace me. He'd be a hell of a lot better at it than I am, too. I'll admit it. He takes shots at everyone. Not only did he take shots at Duke Johnson yesterday, he took a freaking shot at Gerald McCoy yesterday for not signing in Cleveland. I'm just finding myself right now. I don't know why. I'm just finding myself becoming a non-Baker Mayfield guy. I mean, he truly does not know what the word humble means. He's unbelievable. And it's a perfect story to watch that thing explode, too, in Cleveland. So I'm starting to look around now. Some of the names that are being mentioned for Duke Johnson. You know, who are they? Where are they? If, in fact, he is going to be traded. And I think Jacksonville makes a lot of sense. But I get absolutely zero feeling that that is part of the plan right now for this football team. As I've said, I always go back to storylines. My biggest concern on this football team defensively was depth at safety. Well, I think now that we have learned that they have some numbers there that they like. C.J. Revis, obviously a return guy. Cody Davis is arguably the best special teams player on the team. Played very little as a safety. He's there for special teams. But Todd Wash mentioned guys like Zedrick Woods. He mentioned guys like Andrew Wingard. Now, everything changes when the pads go on. But we think we know something, okay? I think I know something. Doesn't mean I do. I think I do. And when I look at the team, I keep thinking they need a third down back and they need depth at safety. They haven't done anything at either one of those two positions. Now, today, they go out and they add another back. They add Taj McGowan out of UCF. They had him in as a rookie when they brought in, what, 60-some-odd rookies, along with the 21 that they signed and the draft class. Is that just simply another look because of what happened to Armstead when he went off the field with an injury on Tuesday? Very easily could be. Again, I'd be beyond shocked if Armstead practices tomorrow or Friday just because he came up lame late yesterday. Or is there more to it? Are they beginning to think, yeah, there is a need for a third down back? And just remember that John DeFilippo, the first thing that he said, because I asked him the question, when it came down to third down backs, his first answer, and it was a long-winded one, it was a very good answer by the offensive coordinator, was the ability to pass protect. That is so often lost as a third down back. Say what you want about TJ Yeldon, the awful attitude. Here's two things that I know. TJ Yeldon was very good in blitz pickup. TJ Yeldon, when asked to stay in and pass protect, did a great job. TJ Yeldon also picked up a lot of first downs on dump downs by Blake Bortles. TJ Yeldon picked up a lot of first downs when he was handed the football on third down and whatever. I'm going to look at it here. Touches for Yeldon compared to first downs. What was that percentage? And as much of a malcontent he really became in how he was a part of the problem within the culture of the locker room. TJ never spoke to the media. TJ was kind of his own guy. Only saw him smile a couple of times in his career. Now, there are certain people that when we're not there, they're happy, they do whatever. When all of a sudden when the media comes in, we are the enemy. That happens all the time. Maybe that was the case. But that's what I saw in TJ Yeldon. He wasn't a good locker room guy. Okay? Very private. Not a rah-rah guy. Not a pick-me-up guy. Kind of an all-about-me guy. But in the same token, outside of D.D. Westbrook, wasn't he the second most productive offensive player on the 2018 Jacksonville Jaguars? I mean, who else would you possibly put on that list? You can't put Fournette on the list, right? You're not going to put Dante Moncrief on the list. You're not going to put Keelan Cole on the list. You're not going to put DJ Chark on the list. You're not going to put Rashad Green on the list. You're not going to put O'Shaughnessy on the list. Austin Seferian Jenkins on the list. The Beldos are on the list. Ben Koyak on the list. Who else are you going to put on the list? Corey Grant? No. TJ Yeldon was your second most productive offensive player last year. And he was laughed out of town. He embarrassed himself out of town. But he's a good third down back. He'll do a nice job in Buffalo with that role. I don't know if the Jags have a player right now who fits that role. I want to hit this post on time. I just want to say this, though, and I've said it before. Don't be surprised as you get throughout the course of games this year, you see Alfred Blue or Thomas Rawls get carries on first and second down, and let's say the third, fourth, fifth, sixth drive on, and it's Fournette who's not out there on first and 10. And is not out there on second down or whatever. And you see Fournette become the third down back. Now, he's still going to lead the team in touches. And he'll be the first guy out there on first and 10 against Kansas City. But as you get deep into a game and you start getting the ball back in more series, Don't be surprised if you see that is what Leonard Fournette is a part of on this year's team.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, it's 8:20. We go to 9. James Coleman, Denny Thompson coming up tonight at 9 o'clock. They call it the Sports Den. Let me see, trying to get a score here. No score in the first. How about Austin Riley? 9 home runs and 75 at-bats for the Atlanta Braves. You know, you do see things like this with rookies early on, and then you get a book on them. And typically, guys that come into the league and explode tail off a little bit. I think the opposite has happened this year for, you know, I can't even think of his name right now, the son of the Hall of Famer in Toronto.
Vlad Jr.
Yeah,
right?
Vlad Jr. I mean, off to a horrendous start early on. But I was reading today that, like, in his last 12 games, he's hitting, like, 360. And you know, he got off to a real bad start. Biggio's son is playing for Toronto as well. He's off to a rough start. We saw Fernando Tatis, his son, got off to a decent start as far as some power numbers, but not with the average early on in San Diego. Chavis putting up some monster numbers. He's flatlined in the last week and a half or so in Boston. It's really interesting how that is, because it's like putting on the PGA Tour. It really is. With the draft that we have just gone through over the last couple of days, you know, what's the old expression? You drive for show, you putt for dough. Now, I was talking with a buddy the other day, Russell Knox, who, of course, played out of JU. His qualifying missed getting to the United States Open by one stroke. That's how it is for so many of these great golfers. The difference between getting into an event and not getting into an event, or getting a card and not getting a card, comes down to making your putts, rolling them in. Same with baseball. These guys can catch up with fastballs. But when you start throwing them sliders and curveballs, that is where you really separate the men from the boys. And first time to second time around is completely different for a lot of these hitters. That game is delayed right now between Atlanta and Pittsburgh. Keep you updated on that. But Austin Riley's got power to all fields. It's fun to watch all that. Acuna as well. He got hit last night. More controversy. A Pirates announcer, Steve Blass, went the old school route. You can't do it anymore. You can't do it. You can't say what you think. Old school hates it. He's got jewelry on. He's got all this padding up and down his arms. You know, Bonds had the padding. He played in Pittsburgh. I guess he didn't do it then. He did in San Francisco. Ortiz had the pad. That's one thing. But he's got all the jewelry hanging out. You can't say, look at him with the jewelry and stuff. That's considered crusty, old, white dude. And that doesn't work. You can't do it anymore. This man's getting destroyed to the point where I expect almost a public apology. You know, I'm sure some people out there want his job. We talked about it a night ago with Hank Haney, making the comments that he did with the LPGA Tour. You got to watch what you say. I mean, here I am. I love my alma mater, Florida State. I tee off on them because I freaking hate losing. And what I hate more than losing is I hate the acceptance of losing. I mean, I used to get pissed when they'd lose one game a year and they would finish in the top four every year. Talk to Leon Searcy about it. I remember when Donna Murphy and I, when Donna produced my show and Jack Del Rio brought Michael Irving in to talk to the team, and he sat in studio with me for an hour. And I asked him about the 87 game, and the Noles had a 19-3 lead, and why Deion Sanders wasn't on him in that game. Now, he was playing one of the Blades brothers, who was very talented as well. But Michael Irvin looked at me and said, man, I haven't been asked that question in over 20 years. I said, that's the type of stuff I stake with me. Florida State should have won a national title that year. So I used to get uptight when they'd lose one game a year. You don't even want to be around me with them losing seven games a year. But I love the response here. I mean, listen to this. Guy calls me disgusting. I'm like, all right, whatever, you know. Then he goes, you never bash Florida like this during McElwain. Your boss wouldn't allow it. Now, when I respond, as I have done, that means that he wins, right? Because the feeling is, if I'm responding to something like this, it really bothers me. And in a lot of cases, yes. But sometimes I just have to roll with it because it is beyond absurd. My boss has never spoken to me about my content. Okay? I have been spoken to about things before. My content is not one of them. My preparation, my contact, my effort is not one of them. And to regular listeners to me, regardless of what shift I have been on, know that I absolutely destroyed McElwain, especially after lying in the death threat.
Which is pretty cool.
So do I need to prove myself to you, one listener? No. But sometimes people say things that are just beyond absurd, and this is one example of that. My boss wouldn't allow it. I mean, okay. Rule one in radio has always been you go with it, you do it, and then you wait to get called in. And then you give your reasoning for why you did it. I have never once in my life asked, am I allowed to do this? Am I allowed to say that? No. Never works out that way. And for those of you who may be wondering, I'm on noon to 3 anymore. I'm on at night. May have something to do with my opinion. And it's certainly not a shy one, where I would have asked the boss first. If that's not enough proof for you, I don't know what is. Truth Teller News and Notes, brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. Love Tom Brady, but boy, is he making a mistake here. I mean, I've really been an incredible fan of this guy, and he's the best quarterback to ever play the game. But this is really a story of greed now, trademarking the Tom Terrific saying is so below Tom Brady. I just don't get it. I mean, what was he on? Jimmy Kimmel the other night? Or he was on one of those guys who, if you don't agree with him politically, he hates you. I think it was Kimmel. And he takes less because his wife makes all the money. He only makes $15 million a year. There's 15 quarterbacks in the NFL who make more money than him. He does all the right things. He's a tremendous teammate, a tremendous leader, maybe the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. And now he's going to trademark this, which everyone knows who played the game of baseball or followed the game of baseball. That was the name that Tom Seaver had for years and years and years and years. Always seem to back Tom Brady, but in this case, this is a total clown show, and I'm actually very disappointed in him. Phil Sims thinks the NFL players want 18 games. Found that interesting. All right, they're going to get paid more money. They're going to legalize marijuana. They're going to get a slice of the pie, the revenue stream from the legalization of gambling in the National Football League. All right, I tend to agree with that. Then you read Tony Dungy, who goes on to say an 18-game season would be a mistake. He calls it the greed factor. And you know what? It got me thinking a little bit. I have always made the point that how can the NFL, out of one side of their mouth, say, we're doing everything we can to eliminate concussions. There'll be no more bull in the ring. There'll be no more the Oklahoma drill. Full contact is certainly gone during the offseason. There's very little contact during the season. Oh, yeah, but we want to add 18 games, but we still are concerned about concussions. That's kind of the way I thought of 18 games. Tony Dungy made an interesting point. Talking about the NBA Finals, Klay Thompson goes down with an injury. Kevin Durant can't play. He's looking at Leonard limping up and down the floor. They play an 82-game schedule. Then they play 2 months' worth of playoffs in the NBA. Is that the way that you want the NFL with 18 regular season games? These players are already really beaten up. Can they take an extra 2 weeks plus the playoffs? Interesting point. And honestly, I agree with what Tony Dungy had to say here. They're going to move back to three-point line in college hoops. I think college basketball fans, for the most part, would agree with this, that it is too easy of a shot. They're going to move it back now 22 feet. It's going to be 22 feet, 1 3/4 inches is what it is going to be now. It's going to be the same as the international distance. You know, I don't want to compare basketball to hockey because I know I'll lose you, but I think it's going to make the sport a little bit better. You're seeing guys attempt three-point shots that shouldn't take them. I think you move it back a little bit, there'll be less of that. There also is, in some instances, too easy of a shot, too close to the hoop. I remember, you know, going back a decade or so ago when the National Hockey League finally lifted the blue line. They went the international route. They went the rules of the Olympic-style hockey. Okay, first of all rinks went from 180 feet to 200 feet. Actually, that'd be technically wrong. A lot of the new buildings that came in were of 200 feet. It was just the original six that was at 180 feet. Well, you couldn't have the two-line pass, and all of a sudden they allowed it in the Olympics, and they watched the way it was played in some of these other countries like Finland and Sweden and Russia and stuff like that, and provided a little bit more excitement in the game. So they allowed the two-line pass. It made for better hockey. Some believe. I mean, to me, hockey's not nearly as good now as it used to be. There's a lot of things I don't like about today's game. I don't like that you can't tie it up in the corner anymore and get a face-off. I don't like that you can have fights anymore in the game. I'm not a fighting guy, but when you used to fight, you used to be able to police yourself. Now you get too many guys using sticks. You have more permanent injuries, stick work that has come out because now you have four lines. You don't have goons anymore. You don't have henchmen anymore that are out there to simply protect stars. Now guys can make runs at stars and knock them out of the game, and there's no one on the ice or on the bench who can protect them. But I think in this case, yeah, the line is too close. Push it back a little bit, and they're going to do that in college basketball. So that's a move there that has taken place or will take place and be put into effect as early as the college basketball season, which is coming up, obviously, later in 2019. All right, there you go. Truth Teller News and Notes brought to you by truckcrashlaw.com. Let's set the scene for tomorrow when we do return. Final nuggets on what to expect during day 9 of OTAs for the Jags. Plus, Charles Barkley on Kevin Durant. And I think he made complete sense. I really do. I'm a huge fan of Kevin Durant. I'm also a huge fan of Charles Barkley. And I'm siding towards Barkley on this one. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm going to share that with you coming up. And also Adrian Peterson with one of the most incredible, unreachable goals for 2019. Turns 34, or just did a month ago. This is beyond realistic, but yet he put it out there. If he put it out there, we're going to share it with you. That's coming up on Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, reports now beginning to filter in that Craig Kimbrell has signed with the Chicago Cubs. This is pending a physical. This comes from The Athletic. Kimbrell, along with Dallas Keuchel, a couple of stars, respectively, from the closer and starter positions, respectively, still out there for the taking. Kimbrell was tremendous in Atlanta. You know, Atlanta obviously now benefiting off of the moves that they made and the youth movement that they have become, and you know, the Braves you know, outside of what Markakis, for you know, Freeman's been around for a little bit, and Donaldson they went out and acquired this year. He's north of 30, but I mean they're a very young baseball team. They have the chance to be something special for years to come. The Cubs are built to win right now, if they can get healthy. And you know that's been the biggest question with Bryant, is his health and you know whatever. Just a phenomenal baseball team with Rizzo there, and of course Jacksonville's Baez and frontline pitching. Lester had a 3-game losing streak the other day. I think he won on Monday night. Or it might have been yesterday for John Lester. But go out now and get Craig Kimbrel, because they've gone through kind of, you know, bullpen by committee this year. They have four guys on the staff who have picked up saves. I just wonder about Kimbrel. He was really, really good in Boston. Okay, he was outstanding in Boston. But then he just seemed to fall apart last year during the World Series. And, you know, you look at that bullpen. He's gone. Joe Kelly's gone. They moved Kelly off to Los Angeles. He was throwing more than 100 miles an hour in the October Classic. And you know, they actually took Kimbrel out, as we remember. You know, in Game 6, they went to Chris Sale, got the final outs in the ninth inning. I still think that this guy can get the job done, but his location a year ago was really off. And he was starting hitters 1-0, 2-0. 2-1. And just look at baseball numbers and how important that is to start a hitter with a strike and how much worse of a pitcher you are, particularly as a reliever, if you're starting hitters with a ball. So I think location, location, location is going to be the issue for Kimbrel. His velocity is fine. It's just whether or not he can get the ball over the plate. This is a huge cue now for Chicago. I think we've had some pretenders early on, Minnesota, who got blown out last night by Cleveland. I haven't even looked to see what they're doing so far tonight. I just don't think they have the staying power. I don't think Tampa Bay has the staying power. I truly, as much as it pains me to say, I think the New York Yankees are arguably the best story in baseball. The fact that they're winning at this pace with all of those injuries is just phenomenal. I think Houston's the best team in baseball. I really believe that. And they're dealing with a couple of injuries as well. But we'll see. The National League is wide open. You know, Philadelphia and Atlanta, Chicago and Milwaukee. St. Louis is the type of team that is so tournament-tested over the years that I don't think you can count them out. Probably a wild card team, if that. And then the Wild Wild West, I mean, you got four teams getting after it. With L.A., San Diego, Colorado, and Arizona, you know. L.A., the great story, the great team, the pedigree, but then the other three really fighting for a wild card. So it's been an interesting year. We'll see who buyers are and sellers are. And this is what gets me to Kevin Durant, because Charles Barkley said he has the thinnest skin I've ever seen, talking about Kevin Durant. I mean, the New York rumors with Kevin Durant have been out there for months. That Durant's leaving Oakland, he's going to New York, where New York is starving for a star, in my opinion. Who's the biggest star right now in New York? Is it the other Barkley? Is it Saquon Barkley?
Right now, off the top of my head, I think Saquon, when I think New York.
OBJ's no longer there. It's no one in hockey. It's no one in basketball. I mean, yeah, you'd like to say maybe Judge, but he'd been hurt all year. Stanton, man, the guy got booed in his second game a year ago. I mean, who is it? The Mets, they got some young arms, but, you know, they're lucky to win 12 games a year on that brutal team. They'll win a Cy Young, but they'll win 12 games. I don't know. Anyway, Kevin Durant moves the town. He's the biggest star, but Barkley says he has the thinnest skin. He doesn't know if he's made for New York City. I think Barkley's 100% on this. I think this is incredible advice for Kevin Durant. Does he understand what he's getting himself in? Does he have any clue what it's really like? He's been in Texas with the Longhorns, OKC, and Oakland. Does he realize what it's going to be like in New York? Look at the three monster contracts that we dealt with this summer. Or excuse me, this winter in Major League Baseball. Manny Machado's hitting 230 in San Diego. Do you think they care? Get up every day, it's 80 degrees. He's got a beautiful life. They don't care. Mike Trout's making $400 million. Mike Trout is going to win another MVP. You know what Mike Trout and Manny Machado have in common? They're never going to swing the bat in the month of October. They're never going to go to the playoffs. They're never going to have a huge at-bat because their season's going to be over. Who's the third man in the equation who went straight into the microwave? That's Bryce Harper. The guy was getting booed during his third at-bat in Philadelphia with that brutal fan base. I mean, seriously. Look up the lowest common denominator when it comes to a human being, and you're going to see a picture of a Philadelphia fan. Bryce Harper chose the worst quality of life. But the difference between Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, and Mike Trout is that Bryce Harper is going to see meaningful at-bats in the month of October. Trout never will. Machado never will. Kevin Durant, he can pick his team. Does he want to go to this losing franchise that seriously is just made mistake after mistake after mistake? And if he doesn't live up to the contract, he is going to get destroyed in New York City. I'm scoring this one for Charles Barkley. I think he's really on to something here. I give him a lot of credit for coming out and saying it. And, you know, if this is a writer or a talk show host who's saying it, whatever. You get a little bit of credence to it. This is Charles Barkley who's saying it. This is Charles Barkley who played in Philadelphia and then played in Phoenix. He knows the difference between the East Coast and the West Coast media. When he was playing in Philadelphia, he knows what it's like to be rivals in facing the Boston Celtics and the New York Knicks. He knows what it's like to go into those cities. And then he knows what it's like to be out in Phoenix and to play in the West Coast and to see what it's like there. It is absolutely night and day. The media, the fan frenzy, and most importantly, the hatred is nowhere near that West Coast way compared to what you get in the East Coast. I think Kevin Durant needs a look at these comments by Charles Barkley. I like Kevin Durant. I like him an awful lot. Of course, he's not going to play tonight, but I think he had to take these to heart.
Now, the 2-minute drill delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
At Moe's, our caterings come with a heaping side of peace of mind, not to mention the free chips and salsa, delivery, and setup. Visit moescateringfl.com.
All right, Denny Thompson is here. It is time for the Sports Den.
It is, man. It is. You're going to be early for OTAs tomorrow, aren't you?
Me?
Make me feel bad again.
You know what? Actually, I have an obligation tomorrow. It's going to be the only one of the 10 OTAs that I will not be a
what?
Part of.
Yeah. You got a Cal Ripken streak going on.
I know. But you know what I got tomorrow? And I don't do this often, but I got a big event with Advanced Disposal, and I got a big event with the Chamber of Commerce, and I'm going to get out and play. I have to get with my clients
Come
tomorrow.
Come on, Mangler.
I am Cal Ripken-esque, but I'm going to miss one workout tomorrow.
You know what I'm going to do?
No.
I'm going to take one of those bottled waters that they give us.
Yeah.
And I'm going to pour one out for you, man. Like, just in your honor. I'm going to do that for
that.
You.
So I'm going to make
Iron Man's streak is coming to an end.
I'm going
to
make 12 out of the 13.
Mm. And now will vacation. You be at the mandatory minicamp?
Oh yeah. Oh, there's no that's the other three I'll make next week.
Okay.
If this was mandatory minicamp week, I would be there. But
where are y'all playing golf at?
I tell you, but I'd have to kill you. Oh. Swimmer and Squire.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hold on.
A little preview before the Guggen.
Yeah, hold on a second now.
A little preview before the Guggen.
I see what you're doing now. Mangler, I can't get an invite, man.
Mm.
I couldn't play tomorrow anyway. It's
Monday. I honestly, I hate You know how I am about these OTAs. I hate missing them.
I know.
I love getting out there, but
I'm shocked.
This is just.
I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
What is?
And I'm not
going to
lie and say I got other obligations. I'm coming right out and saying. I mean, I'm doing it tomorrow.
So the Googans this Monday, right?
Yeah.
87. High of 87. That's not bad.
You play him?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. You're going to play with Dr. Swanson and the team at Southeast. So when I pull
him
up,
I played
back,
with Dr. Swanson a few weeks ago over at Atlantic Beach. He's a great golfer.
He is really good. He is good. He's to be so
he
tall.
He shot an 85 at Atlantic Beach.
Yeah, I don't know. The day
in
we
went
out.
A very, very windy day.
Yeah, the day we went to Atlantic Beach, it was just unfair. It was really unfair. But I think he still shot like mid-80s.
Hey, listen, Atlantic Beach is a very difficult golf course.
Isn't it crazy, though? You go play that, and we come away mm-hmm. saying that. But then they do a web.com event, and the winning score is 26 under.
I mean, they're great. You know, they're phenomenal golfers. I'm a weekend golfer.
It's absolutely crazy.
That goes out there and has a lot of fun. But, I mean, OTAs, I'll have reports tomorrow night. I got a couple of guests lined up and all that good stuff. But sadly, I'm going to miss it tomorrow.
I don't know if James will be out there, but I'll be out there.
Well, maybe I'll bring you on for a report. Unless you're hiding out by where the shade is.
I don't really, Something has to happen for me to notice it. I'm not over there taking notes.
What's going on tonight? Did you hear that I fell under the pressure of
I did.
The James Coleman Mafia, and I had my radio spot changed? You know where I'm losing?
What?
I'm losing in the wallet. I'm taking a big punch here for the sake of the friendship between Coleman and I. I've got kids to feed, but I said, I'm not going to put this relation, and I don't want to catch a bullet from the Mafia. I said, that's all right. I don't need the money. Someone else do the commercial.
Wow. I don't know that I'd have done that.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have done that. And you have to ask yourself, would one James Coleman have done that for you?
I don't ask about anyone else's opinion.
I don't think you would have.
He's concerned about me here.
I don't think he would have.
I was told I still have to do one interview with him, but that'll be in a few weeks.
I did hear, I was made aware that the very talented voice here.
Yes.
Voiced it over. Wow, that's, Mm-hmm. I'm speechless. But we're going to get into, I heard Frangie talking earlier, and then I looked it up, and it's an older list, like older as in a couple weeks ago, about the best jobs in college football. And have you seen this list from Athlon?
Yes. I was, they ranked the top 130 jobs.
Yeah,
I saw it.
Yeah, and Georgia was number one.
Right.
So I want to get into that and actually do our own ranking.
Yeah, how can they be number one if they haven't won a national title in 40 years?
Well, in what way can you even classify them? They don't have the most money. They don't have the best recruiting base. They don't. I mean, it was a weird thing, but we're going to get into that tonight.
And then, you know, along the same lines, I talked about this a little bit earlier today. Feinbaum did a list of the top 10 teams with the most pressure to win in college football. And, of course, he went with Alabama because he's a Bama guy. But how can you not have Georgia at number one right now, considering they haven't won a title in almost 40 years? I mean, to me, it'd be Georgia, and then it'd probably be Notre Dame because they haven't won since 1988.
Does anybody expect Notre Dame to win, though? Or have we gotten to the point now when we say – actually, you mind if I keep this?
No, go ahead.
Actually, have we gotten to the point now where when we see Notre Dame, we just go, no, they're going to lose too?
Yeah.
Like, nobody really – but Georgia, you've got Jake Fromm one more year maybe two. This is your year. You better do it. And Texas to win a college football – come on.
Well, if you're Georgia.
Does Feinbaum drink?
I don't know.
Heavily before the show?
I don't know what he's on. By the way, if you're Georgia, you want Fromm gone after this year.
You do?
Yeah, because if he's gone after this year, then he had a Heisman Trophy type of year, great year, and they win a national championship. You know, I'm kind of looking at it that way. He has a spectacular season. They win it all. He goes pro. Last thing you want is for them to fall short again, then him, you know, to end up
For greedy reasons, I want him to stay another year because I want my man Carson behind him for a year.
Yep.
I'd love that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like we were talking about this the other day, why would you leave Georgia if you're Jake Fromm? You've got everything there. You're worshipped there. Yep. Like we were talking about, is Matt Stafford the most beloved college quarterback and coming out of Athens? There's just not that many.
Why did Isaac Nata leave? He went in the seventh round.
Yeah.
And Brent, they didn't throw to him enough.
Yeah.
But why did he leave?
Yeah,
I mean, there's a guy right there. If he comes back, plays another year, gets the ball a little bit more, it was a great tight end class.
Yeah.
He could maybe end up going in the third, fourth round next
year. I mean, if I'm Jake Fromm, I don't think he's a first-round quarterback, personally. But if I'm Jake Fromm, I'm riding my time there, man. They love him there.
Yeah.
I mean, he could, if he stayed every year, he could be the most beloved player since Herschel Walker to come out of Georgia.
We'll see what happens.
So we'll get into all
coming
that.
Up. All right, there he goes. Denny Thompson, James Coleman coming up right now. The producer is Matt LaVey. My name is Rick Ballew. We're back tomorrow night. That is Thursday from 7 to 9 right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.